Hey friends, before we dive in, my new book, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is out now, available on intentionalparents.org exclusively, so go check that out. Christmas is coming. What a great Christmas present to get your family praying. And don't miss our upcoming retreats, the Intentional Fatherhood Retreat, February 19 through 21, 2026, in Costa Mesa, California, and the Intentional Motherhood Retreat. We announced this April 23rd through 25th, 2026 in Franklin, Tennessee. Please come out and know that early bird pricing is on both of those events, so check that out. These retreats are spaces to pause, breathe, and invest in your spiritual formation as a parent. So learn more, get your tickets now at intentionalparents.org, and let's get into this week's episode. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. Well, we have a big treat for you today. Today on the show, we have Catherine Hill. Now, Catherine is the UK director of a ministry called Care for the Family. She's a popular author and speaker, a broadcaster on family issues. She's a regular contributor for the Huffington Post, and she actually is also a practiced lawyer. She's an incredibly full capacity person. Just recently, she actually made her way across the pond, as they say, and actually came over our way. And we spent a handful of days with Catherine, and it was just such a treat. And as we were talking, we're like, we just have to get you on the podcast and we have to talk about this stuff. And so I can't even tell you how elated we are to share this with you, because it was so rich. She recently wrote a book called Left to Their Own Devices, Confident Parenting in a World of Screens, and many others. And so we're going to have different conversations about that. But this conversation that we have today is around the topic of how do we have confident parenting in this season of life that we find ourselves in. So a real treat today. And also just want to let you know about one quick resource. So mid-November, Elizabeth and I are going to be in the Sacramento area, and we're actually going to be doing a marriage retreat for families with children with disabilities. And the whole hope is to get a couple away and to pour into them, to encourage them for 24 to 48 hours, and to give them some hope and some practical tools in their journey as they have kids with disabilities. And so if you want to know more about that, we're going to be partnering with an organization called Johnny and Friends, and we're going to be out there mid-November. If you want dates and places and times, just click on the link in the show notes. And if this isn't for you, if you're listening and you go, you know, that's actually not my story, but I know some people that would really be benefited by that, feel free to just forward this episode or forward that link to them. But take advantage of that. That's mid-November in Sacramento area. Anyone's welcome from any part of the country. So no matter where you find yourself, if that's going to be helpful to you, we'd love to see you there. We'd love to meet you and love to have some conversations. But today, left to their own devices, an amazing conversation with Catherine Hill. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today we have some sophistication on the show, which I'm very thankful for. Phil's especially thankful for because he has a fond love for all things British.
Mm-hmm. I love the Brits.
And
it's been way too long since I've been there, and people are going to love today.
Yes, they are, because we have Catherine Hill on the show. Welcome, Catherine.
Well, it is so good to be with you. Oh.
This is such a fun, we've honestly been really excited about this. So I have to tell a little bit of the backstory. So Catherine, we're going to tell you who she is and we're going to talk about all that stuff, which I'm really excited about. But I also we've been talking and about how we connected. So funny story. So John Mark, we were talking, you had met John Mark. Where did you meet John Mark at again?
I met him at a summer conference in England called New Wine. And he was speaking and he was talking a lot about the digital age. And it's something I was really looking into for families. Yes. And we bumped into each other, I think, over a cup of coffee.
Yeah. And I remember he texted me or he emailed me and said, you have to talk to Catherine. I just met this gal, Catherine. You've got to have her on the podcast. She'd be gold. And I was like, amazing. So I think he connected us over email. And this was right before the pandemic.
It was.
And then everything for everybody just stopped. It all just stopped. And so, and then it was about, was it a year later at least? I think it was close to a year later that you were so kind and you jumped back on like, I think we were all connected and I might actually be coming to the States. And so I was just very excited to have you here. So thank you for making the trip. You're live and in person, which is a rare gift for anybody, but you're here with us. And I'm so glad that you made the trip.
Yeah, my first trip to the Northwest. So I am loving it.
That's right. Yes. And now, where else have you been?
In America. I've been to Boston and Chicago and San Francisco.
Wonderful. Now, just for some people that maybe need a little bit of heads up on what you do, give just people a snapshot. Because I know, again, you've written eight books. That's a lot. And we're going to talk about one of them today and then mention a few others because they're fascinating and I think they're going to be such a gift to those listening. But I also want to talk about what you do with Care for the Family and explain what that is for those who might not know.
So I am on the leadership team of Care for the Family, and Care for the Family is a UK charity, and we seek to provide support for families to strengthen family life throughout the UK. And we work in three areas. So we work in the area of marriage and couple relationships, in the area of parenting and bereavement. Yes. And I said this to you last night, we talk about being the fence around the top of the cliff rather than the ambulance at the bottom. So what we want to do is give families support upstream and give them really good skills to build strong family life. Yes. So they are in a strong place when the troubles hit, because I think our experience is every family goes through tough times at some time or other. So
The fence at the top rather than the ambulance at the bottom. I just want to let that sink in because that's really, really great. And I know that's, you know, for intentional, I know for you, Phil and Diane, that's been your calling too. Yes. And I think our calling as a whole of trying to get to the place where we can be help on the preventative side, to say, hey, how can we build into your marriage and your family? And
there's no verse in the Bible guaranteeing that if you do everything right, your kids are going to choose to follow Jesus. But the likelihood of that are so much stronger when we do it God's way right out of the gate. And so, you know, I think both what you're doing with Care for the Family and what we're trying to do is I call on the preventative side. Like, children are a gift from the Lord, and he gives us all the instruction how to do it. And as much as we can do it right on the preventative side, then we're the fence at the top of the hill. I'm going to steal that.
Yeah. Top of the cliff.
Instead of the ambulance at the bottom, you know, thank God for ambulances. We all need them. But
we do try and we reach out to families as well who are in crisis. But our main focus is the prevention.
Yeah, that's so needed. You know, but are you going to, I just want to make sure they realize we're in the presence of a pretty cool lady here.
Go for it. Why don't you take it?
Tell us what you were before you got in the Care for the Family.
Yeah, because this is fun.
You weren't always doing this. And so,
give us your history. How did you get into this? And I know you shared a little bit last night, so maybe share a little bit, but just how long ago this started and kind of your whole process and story.
And tell us what a solicitor is.
Well pronounced. So I trained as a family lawyer. Okay. So I was at university, did law at university, met my husband at law college, Richard. And I should say I'm married to Richard. We got four children and five grandchildren, which are a delight. Yeah. I heard someone say the other day, if they'd known grandchildren were that much fun, they'd have had them first. So I was a family lawyer, and when I was doing that work, I came up front with the pain of family breakdown. So I was working in the area of divorce, of custody, adoption, care proceedings, all the really tough stuff of family life. And I think at that time, God gave me a real passion to see family life strengthened and to try and do something upstream so that some of these, you know, you can't save every marriage, but some of these things could have been prevented. And people just didn't know where to go for help or what to do. And so, so then I had our four children, and then through an extraordinary set of circumstances with God's fingerprint all over them, I came into contact with Care for the Family and ended up working for them. First of all, on a marriage project, and then that was just one day a week, and then it's gradually grown and grown.
Wait,
and grown.
So tell me that part, because I know you were saying like you were getting into this. Yeah. I like this part where you're like, because you had, tell us about that instance you met at the coffee shop.
Oh, wait, but first, you've got to... people are going to be confused. For our American audience, a solicitor is a...
it's a lawyer. Yes.
But we don't call them solicitors here. Yeah. So when I heard that over in the UK, I said, what's that?
Was it an attorney? What would you call
it? An attorney.
An attorney.
An attorney or a lawyer here, but nobody uses solicitor.
Okay.
Which is
okay.
cool.
I'll
and you explain what a barrister is, too.
And a barrister is the one who generally has a wig on and will be representing clients in court. But solicitors have rights of audience in court as well.
Yeah, good. So, we got to educate our American audience.
Okay. Well, you're going to be hearing a lot of pretend British accents today and genuine ones. So I just you're welcome, and I'm sorry. So, but today though, on that note though, you met somebody and you were standing in coffee. Tell us about that, like, divine appointment kind of thing.
It was really a divine appointment.
That was sweet.
And I sometimes think when things are tough, it's so good to look back and see how God has guided you specifically. And certainly how he guided me to work for Care for the Family was amazing. So I already had this sense that I wanted to do something to help families, to strengthen family life. And I had heard of Care for the Family, and Care for the Family was set up by someone called Rob Parsons, who was also a lawyer, 30 years ago. And I had heard of their work and thought it was really great. So I decided to write him a letter. I didn't know him at all. So, dear Mr. Parsons, I don't know if there are any jobs available. I used to be a lawyer, that sort of thing.
Okay.
But I never, ever posted it. It stayed on my desktop, on my laptop for a long, long time, but never posted that letter. So fast forward a bit, and I went to a conference in London that was about running the marriage course.
Okay.
And we were learning how to do that. And I was in a coffee queue. And that morning, I remember we stayed with friends in London, and I was lying on a very uncomfortable futon. Do you have futons?
Oh, yeah. And they're just as uncomfortable here.
So uncomfortable. I had this bar across my back. And I remember praying for a divine appointment that day.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd really prayed that sort of thing before, but I did. So I'm standing in the coffee queue with some friends, and a guy comes up to our friends and says, "Where are you from?" And they said, "Bristol," which is where we live in the southwest of England.
Okay.
And they said, "Oh, have you, you don't know someone called Catherine Hill, do you? I've been given her name."
He says this to you?
No, he says it to our friends.
Oh, she's friends. Got it. Okay.
And they said, "Well, she's just there next to you." So he said to me, "I'm from Care for the Family, and I've been given your name. Would you like a job?" So I said, "No."
Did you ever say no?
Despite all that, because I said no.
No, why?
Well, I was involved in our church. I was church warden, which was a position of quite a lot of responsibility. We had four young children. And then, you know, I thought, oh, I thought about that letter. Mm-hmm. I thought about the fact I prayed that prayer.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, okay. So they persuaded me to go to the offices and just see. And the minute I set through the door, I thought, this is what I want to do.
Okay.
But again, I didn't know how it was going to work, because I certainly didn't want to work full time.
Yeah.
So I had an interview, and I knew it was for a full time job. And at the end of it, they said, well, I mean, it was ridiculous. They said, what can you do? And I must have been a bit arrogant, I don't know. But I said I could do one day a week. And they said, okay. So that's how it began. Wow. That's how it began. Wow. And I then was full time. I've actually reduced my hours just quite recently. But it's the best job. I absolutely love it. So
what a gift.
But can I interrupt? And can you explain why you reduced your hours just recently?
I reduced my hours because I wanted to have time for my grandchildren.
Yes.
My daughter-in-law had gone back to work, and she needed someone to help with childcare one day a week. And so I did that, and then got other grandchildren as well. So I reduced my hours. A disaster to start with because I reduced the hours and not the work. But
that's right.
We're now back in step on that one.
Okay, that's good. Your priorities. I'm liking your priorities, yes. Catherine.
And reducing the work for, you know, obviously living out what you're trying to live out.
Well, it's so easy, isn't it, to do something like this at the expense of your own family.
Yes.
Which just
Tell us some of the things you do around the UK, the live events where you speak and the kind of things you do for families.
So we work in the areas of couple relationships, parenting and bereavement. And the ones I mainly focus on are on the marriage and the parenting. And so we have courses and resources and books, but also we go around the country on tours. So obviously in COVID, that all came to a halt.
Goodness, yeah.
And we ended up doing a lot of things online. And most people had quite a steep learning curve, been very exciting. We had one marriage course that we did and 10,000 couples signed up to it right at the beginning of COVID. It was amazing. It was really amazing.
Because that was the time when every married couple felt that they're like, please, we need help. We have been avoiding.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got to figure this out really quickly. 10,000. That's great.
So that was amazing. But our main thing, we love to be face to face with people. And so we will go to a church. We're a Christian organization, but a lot of what we do, we try and make it accessible to anybody. We have some really specific resources for the church and for the Christian community as well. So we'll go to a church and we'll put on an event and people will come along and it will be, it might be on parenting teenagers, might be parenting primary years, might be, I'm doing one at the moment on helping build our children's emotional well-being.
Yes.
We've done one on the digital age, all kinds of different ones that people come to.
Well, that's, I think, a great transition point to two of the books that, and I want to say thank you for giving them to us because I'm really grateful because I know I've already been perusing them. But the book I want to discuss today, you wrote a book called A Mind of Their Own, which we'll get to. But you also wrote another book about the digital world that we live in. And I know that, you know, anybody that's listening to this podcast, this is something that it's a topic of our time. And everybody's asking the question, how do we engage well with the digital world? How do we use it to our advantage? What are the right parameters? What's too much? What's too little? All those questions. And you wrote a book called Left to Their Own Devices, which I just love. It's just such a clever title. I love, how did you come up with this title?
Well, I can't really say it was great thought on my part, but I had written the book and it was the weekend and the publishers had said to me, we need a title by Monday.
Oh no.
And I could only think of really lame things, couldn't think of a good title at all. And then it was Sunday night and I sat down with the paper and I opened it up and I said, Lord, you know, you're going to have to help me with this title.
Yeah.
Opened up the paper and there was this heading on an article and it said, Left to Their Own Devices. And it kind of jumped out at me and I thought, yes, that is it. So Left to Their Own Devices. And then the subtitle is Confident Parenting in an Age of Screens.
I love that. And so many things. I want to highlight just a couple things that I think people will. One of the things I love is even the table of contents, because if you're curious about like what is this like, a couple things that stick out to me are the fact that there's no face to face contact, like that piece. Everything's online. Another title: all kinds of families, all kinds of issues. There's stuff about pornography, sexting, online bullying, all the different levels and ages. Mm-hmm. And I thought you've just done such a great job of comprehensively grabbing this topic and talking about all of it. And then at the end of each one, which I loved, by the way, which we'll talk about, is specifically, here's some things that you can do as a family. Here's some stuff that you can do. So I just want to first of all say thank you for this, because this is such a huge gift, I know. And for anybody that is listening, we'll have this in the show notes and please grab a copy because it is really honestly helpful. But what's also really fun is it's a serious, heavy topic and there's funny cartoons that are on like every other page. And I think that it's just pretty, like little comic strips. And I love that.
Yeah. They make you laugh out loud, don't they?
They really
do. Been just in the last half hour, Phil and I have been reading through, flipping through and just reading the comics and just laughing so hard, and Phil saying how much he loves the British sense of humor.
Oh yeah.
Very self-deprecating.
You gotta get the book. Yeah. I'm curious, the question mark at the end of the title, Left to Their Own Devices question mark.
Yeah.
Is that something you put that in by design? Is that like saying, do you really want to leave your kids?
Yes.
Exactly.
To decide for themselves.
Are they left to their own devices,
yes,
or can we influence
or
them?
Or can we? That's.
And I wrote the book partly because the number of parents at Care for the Family that were coming and asking for help in this area. One mum, she said, it just gets harder and harder. I wish the iPhone had never been invented.
Yeah. Yes.
But it has been invented, and particularly since COVID, you know, the digital age is part of our lives. So it's so important as parents that we're on the front foot.
And that was actually one of my first questions, because Chapter 2 is about a resource to embrace. And I know with our kids, we're constantly trying to teach them the wisdom and the skills to navigate technology rather than pretend it doesn't exist. Although that would be nice and easy, we have to help them. And so let's talk about that for a minute. So a resource to embrace, what would you say to the people that are maybe in that camp? Like, I'm just going to stay away. Because we are staying away from certain things like iPhones and or, you know, phones that have any sort of internet connection. We're staying away from social media. Just recently, Ashton Kutcher, of all the people who invested in Twitter, he said, my kids will not use social media. And unless the trends change in the direction, which I hope they do, I think they will, but unless they change, they won't be having cell phones. They won't be having social media. And I'm thinking, this is the dude that literally invested and helped get Twitter off the ground.
Yeah.
And so you have people of any sort of, it doesn't matter your faith background, or saying this is a real struggle. It's
well,
a
Bill
real
Gates,
problem.
Steve Jobs, they were really, really strict about what their children could have access to.
Wow.
Anyone in the Silicon Valley, I think, who knows.
Yeah. So tell us about that. Tell me about this resource to embrace rather than to put away.
Well, I think it didn't want to come across as a sort of dinosaur saying it was all bad. And actually, I think if you think how God parents us as his children, he doesn't remove everything so we don't have the opportunity to choose. He gives us the opportunity to choose, and it is here to stay. And so as parents, if we can equip our children with wisdom to learn to navigate the digital age well, then actually we'll be putting them in such a good a good place. I always say that, you know, as parents, our role isn't to bring up children, and it's not even to bring up teenagers, it's to raise adults who can make good decisions themselves. So the digital age is here to stay, and there is lots of good. So for learning, you know, at the swipe of a screen now, children can get information about almost anything in real time, their favorite team score, or their, you know, history homework, or whatever it is. For children with different sorts of additional need, there's huge advantages for some of these things. And in COVID, it threw us a lifeline. I don't think, you know, particularly for our young people, it was so, so hard being isolated, and it enabled them to, you know, mean that they weren't so isolated, that they could keep connection going. So much part of life now, and there are many, many advantages. So we don't want to sort of ban it, but equally we need to be wise.
So how did you know, for you, as you're in COVID, let's go to your life. How did your life change? Did you get sick of the digital world when you were during COVID? Like, I know I got to the point where I'm like, I'm just tired of doing everything on screens, whether it was church or work, or let's have another FaceTime or another Skype or Zoom meeting. I was just like, it was really old, really quick. When you were in the pandemic and all this was happening, I know that you changed some of what this book was after the pandemic, right? Am I correct about that?
That's right. Yeah. So I wrote it originally in 2017, and there was a new edition in 19, I think, because it's changing all the time.
So fast.
And then we realized very quickly everything had changed. The one particular thing with the pandemic, the original book talked about parents being what's called digital visitors and children being digital residents. So a visitor will go online to perform a task. They see the internet as a tool. So so you might go on and do an email and come off, or go on and place a grocery order and come off again, and then carry on with life. Whereas digital residents just see it as an extension of
their
life. It's
just
how you do life. I think many of our young people look at this is a bit oddly. If you talk about online and offline, they just think it's all part of an integrated whole. And more, I think we've had to skill up since COVID. And so that distinction is blurred. I think it's still there, but we're not, I think parents aren't on the back foot in the same way that they were. But yeah, you asked me about COVID. I think I discovered the introvert in me, which was a surprise. I think it was the Zoom meetings by the end. The novelty at first was quite fun.
Yeah, it was. I think it was too.
But some people just had such a painful time and, you know, just wanted to really acknowledge that and how hard it was for many. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the relentlessness of looking at a screen all day.
It's and it was learning on the screen was really hard for a lot of children too. Yeah. They just couldn't quite grasp it.
I think some of our children have been amazing. They've really learned to do things like Teams and do that online learning and really, really, I talk about that in a mind of their own actually, built resilience like that. It's been incredible what they've been able to do. Mm-hmm. But it's been hard for everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so talk to us about, you know, one of the, I talked to you about this quote later. So this has to do with, you know, obviously life has changed so much. One of the fears that I know so many people have around, so many parents around such access to digital content is pornography, obviously, which I know you did a whole chapter on this, which I'm so thankful you did. But there was a quote of some, I lost the quote. I'll find it in a minute. But the quote was essentially who you were quoting was somebody who basically had said that the access to online pornography is like grafting down heroin and injecting it through their eyes, or so. Is that close to what it is?
That is like that. Yeah.
And I just thought that was such an incredible visual of what is actually happening. We're like a long time ago, you said this, which I love, is that a long time ago, the whole of our culture started realizing, hey, cigarettes are actually bad. We probably shouldn't have them just available for everybody all over the place all the time. We should probably put warnings on it, make sure you're a certain age to buy it, make sure that it's actually something that we're saying, this isn't good for you. But if you choose to engage in it. So I do hope that that is something that we get to. But talk to us a little bit about how you've seen in your research, how you've seen that particular access to everything, not just pornography, but everything, access to everything, how you've seen that affect the child's mind and the development of humans. And some of this we know, but I think you obviously have a really particular, you've studied a lot of this, you've read through a lot of this. So what has been your observation of that?
Well, maybe if I start by saying the three things I think that parents are concerned about most in terms of digital, the digital world. First of all is the content, which is what you're saying, is what children are seeing, what they're able to access. Then it's the contact. So who are they talking to? So the whole issue of grooming. And then finally, conduct. So how they're behaving online. And that's the bullying, the sexting. But yeah, pornography is a really big issue. Way back it would be if you could access material, a magazine or something. Now through the digital stuff, it's just at a speed just really at a level that I think we couldn't have conceived of before.
Almost difficult for a child who's online to avoid.
Yeah.
It pretty much now we have to expect that our children who are online and need to be online are going to encounter pornography. Whether it's soft porn or the really, really nasty stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be shocking and we need to be ready for them.
The unregulated stuff. I think the average age is 13. And very often they're not looking at it. They're not looking for it.
It's just
it just comes at them because they're on, it may be that everything at home, you've got every protection possible, but they're on a friend's phone. Yeah. One of our children I know, first time he saw porn was at a friend's house on the dad's computer. So, you know, we can't protect them from these things, which is why we have to talk to them. And the great thing that we have to offer is that, you know, we know God's incredible plan for sex and relationships. And so we've got a really positive story to be able to to say to our children, because it's not enough just to say don't look at porn. We've got to give them a better story.
How that's going to wreck things for them in the future.
We've had this conversation with there's been another interview that we've had with Greta Eskridge, and she's fascinating on the subject as well. But I'd love to hear your take on, you know, if a parent, okay, so say you find out recently that your kid has seen some things, what would be your recommendation? Like, how does that conversation look? Just maybe on a practical level, in your experience.
Yeah. I mean, we often at CAF, the family, have parents come to us saying, I've just discovered this. And I think number one is, of course, we're shocked. Of course, we're sad. Mm-hmm. But actually to try and put that to one side. And that's really easy for me to say. And it's really, really difficult to do in the moment. But just to focus on our child, and we'll know, we know them best. We love them the most. Mm-hmm. And so we'll know, you know, what age they are and how that might have affected them. But to come alongside them and communicate with them. And if they're feeling guilt or shame, to just talk through that.
Yeah.
And yeah, and if there's a more of a story that needs investigating, then actually to do that. But to know that we're with them, we're on the same side as them. And actually, depending on their age, to talk to them about just the effect of pornography on them and this thing in our brain, neurotransmitter, a chemical called dopamine that's released when we see or do something pleasurable. And that is released with pornography. And so how that, and then it, it's never satisfied. So it's, it needs more and more and more. Yes. And that's how pornography can become imprinted on our children's brains. And,
well, you shared the story. So. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was going to say the story that you shared of a man who is basically who had gotten addicted really young. He's seen it really young. And then just it became something that was like once in a while to like every day, all the time. And the imprinting that you're talking about, where his brain was like rewired to when he got married, he found that he couldn't really actually be intimate with his wife because he realized that he was only really able to be aroused by something that was through a screen and not in his relationship. And I think we have to recognize, like, obviously that's an extreme case, but that's not as abnormal as we would all think or even be aware. So I think it's just it's a topic of our time, no matter how uncomfortable this makes you or not. This is something that we have to be aware of. Like you're saying, we have to be aware. And just like, you know, this topic, the word you mentioned that I think a lot of people don't actually fully understand, which I'd love for you to press into a little bit, is this idea of grooming. Because I don't think that a lot of people actually, I think we understand the concept, like grooming somebody up to, but I think there's a lot there. And I would love to hear, you know, obviously we're not going to go through the whole book today, but I'd love to hear, could you give just a quick synopsis of what that is?
Yeah.
And then kind of how you've, how you have experienced helping people through it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And just on the porn thing, I don't want to leave parents worried and frightened. And just, we have power. We really do to talk to our children about this, to be on the front foot, to come alongside them. So, and you know, not everybody, not every child is going to be looking at it. Not every child is going to be addicted to it by a long way.
Yes.
But just
that's
being aware.
Reminder. Thank you.
Yeah. And having, giving parents confidence. But grooming, grooming is when somebody who usually an adult wants to connect with a child for generally sexual purposes and they pretend. So online, that's why we have to give our children the tools to be curious and not just to accept what they see. And so they might pretend to be a 12-year-old girl, and they might pretend to have the same interests as as our child and form a relationship with them online. But what our child doesn't know is this isn't another 12-year-old girl. This could be a, you know, 50-year-old or whatever man. And so that's why, again, it's so important to tell our children as appropriate that not everybody is who they appear to be online. And never ever to go and meet anyone by themselves that they've only ever met online. Not to reveal details about where they live and all those other things. I mean, basic stuff, but we can forget to tell them.
Well, and I think it's depending upon your foundation, because I mean, so many, I'm thinking like, just recently, I know for us, we banned YouTube completely. We just decided this is not a helpful tool with all the instructions that come in, with all the different things that come in, the risk is too high. And it's nothing, like our kids haven't seen anything crazy, but it's enough to be like, they've been disturbed. And I'm thinking, we don't let them run around with knives. And why would we let them run around with something that can actually hurt them, when in reality, they don't actually need this to survive. They might, like, you want to learn something cool, let's sit down, let's do it together. And then it forces us to have to do this together. But that's, I think, one example of, I think we have to be so involved. I know for us right now, Elizabeth and I, we have to be so involved with any time laptops are open, or, and we have all the filters and all the things, but we have to be very aware of, like, and it's not just the porn thing or the grooming thing. It's actually just even images or like previews to movies that are really horrifying for a small kid. They're like, I don't even know what to do with what I just saw. You know, and you're like, why are we even allowing this in our house? So I do think there's obviously there's a balance of all that. And we've actually held that tension for a long time. And we just decided,
I think for now, this isn't something that we should even, we don't need to worry about. It's just not even enhancing our lives. So, what are your thoughts on that?
And
am I being too protective, overprotective?
No, not at all. You know, and the Bible talks about, doesn't it? Whatever is good, whatever is true, what's ever honorable, you know, those are the things that we want to fill our children's minds with. So having our eyes on to what they're doing. So gaming is a really good example.
Yeah.
And there's a whole new chapter in this edition on gaming. And certainly when our children were younger, I was very much, oh gosh, you know, this is not something I'm interested in.
Yes.
But actually we need to be interested in what they're playing. And mm-hmm. again, there's some great games. I think sometimes mm-hmm. as parents, we come at it and we just think it's for them. But there are things that we can get involved in as well. And it's a new medium for storytelling, for creativity, for all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
And there are some games that that aren't great, but there are also some really good ones as well.
Yeah. What about some of the, I'm trying to think of the parent that uses the gaming situation or the TV situation as a babysitter that's mm-hmm. too often used.
Yeah.
What has been your experience with that? Or you know, what have some of the effects that you've seen from the overuse of just kind of saying, well, you know, I'm just stressed. Because I mean, it's so, I could find 15 excuses right now to be like, please watch the screen so I can be emotionally relieved to not have to parent you through this moment. I see a lot of people using that as a crutch. Mm-hmm. And what are some, in your experience, what are some of the dangers of leaning on that too much, especially really early? Because I see, what I see now is like a lot of little kids.
Oh, really? In their strollers. I see this too. I was going to ask you that. Like, how is that changing even the way we parent in public? It used to be when our children were at the end of their rope and we really needed to pack up and go home. Mm-hmm. They would let everybody know loud and clear. People would turn and look at you and you would pack up and go home. And now I'm seeing instead a parent hand them a phone with some sort of game on it.
Yeah.
How is that affecting even the way we parent and our children to see that the phone as such a distraction?
Yeah, I've heard it called a digital pacifier, which is
a
good phrase, isn't it?
I think
half, certainly in the UK, half of all 3 to 4 year olds own a tablet, have their own tablet.
Yeah.
And again, it's not all bad, but if our absolute default, as soon as they're not happy, is to, just to give them a phone, we're not allowing, when they're a bit older, we're not allowing for boredom. So I write about that in the book, that boredom is a really good thing because it's a seedbed. We're a seedbed for creativity.
Yes.
Often a lot of really good stuff happens when we're bored because we have to think of something else to do. We think outside the box.
To get creative.
And I talk a lot about, you know, not just limiting it to the digital things, but not everyone can get outside. But if you can get outside and the simple things very often are the things that our children love to
do. And there are whole books written about the scientific research involved in how important it is for kids to be outside, to be in the woods,
to be
creative outside. I just ran into a woman in our neighborhood. She was in her late 80s, probably walking by. And she said, now that there are screens, or she didn't call them that, computers, I don't know what she called them. She said, you never see kids out playing it anymore. And then she just kind of walked on it. But it just did strike me when I was a little girl.
That's true.
Mom would basically shoo us out the door and say, don't come back till dinner time.
And there is a big...
You too, Phil, right?
You played
with your cousins.
Go down to the park and we'd find a few guys and start playing flag football or shoot some baskets or play army, whatever. You know, it's like you're outside. Yeah, we knew when dinner was. We were home.
Yeah.
You know? My mom's a great kid. You know, I wanted to backtrack. What you just said, Brooke. You know, you just kind of said, we just banned YouTube. And then people listening like, what?
Yeah.
And, you know, I love your title, you know, Left to Their Own Devices, because, you know, whenever you do try to put some protections in place, your kids are going to protest. Well, why can't I watch?
Yeah.
So, and I think a lot of parents, they begin to feel guilty because their kid wants this.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to interject that God has given these kids to the moms and dads.
Yeah.
And
that's good.
And the moms and dads, we're the priest, provider, protector, you know, we're the adults in the room who should know more, but it takes courage to do what you did. And what you're really doing is you made me think of Psalm 101, which I love the song. I got to just, is it okay?
I was thinking,
verses?
Not be a podcast if you didn't.
I preached a sermon on this because it's David. And we all know David messed up way later in his life.
And a lot.
And then he messed up hugely and he repented hugely.
Yes.
And God still called him a man after my own heart. When he was a young man, he says all these things about keeping his heart pure and being close to God. And Psalm 101 is one of those psalms. They think it was sung at his coronation as king. So he's young.
I didn't know that.
But he says here, I will give heed to the way of integrity. And then he says to God, when will you come to me? In other words, I want to be close to you. I will walk within my house in the integrity of my heart. Hmm. I will set no worthless thing before my eyes. Hmm. Then he goes on to say, I hate the work of those who fall away. It's not going to fasten its grip on me. He says, I will. So he's got this desire. And then he says, he who walks in a blameless way is the one who will minister to me. So it's the way of integrity. So he's saying here, I want to be this godly man and I want to lead my home and the nation the way God wants it led, which is for truth and justice. So anyway, I just think that I'm really proud of you,
thanks.
You had the courage to do that. With some people might say, oh, come on, there's somebody, you know, but you're watching your family. You realize that. So like if a murderer, axe murderer came to your door, you wouldn't say, come on in.
Yet
sometimes we let stuff come into our homes that we could keep out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to just say I'm proud of you for doing that, and no parent's going to do it perfectly.
No,
but we need to have the courage and not just say, "Well, you know, I hope I'll keep my fingers crossed and hope it all works out." You know, because I don't want to have to step into this arena and get pushback.
Yeah,
but it's worth it to do the right thing, and you cover that in this book. So
I was reading Catherine's other book, which I hope we get to at the end of this podcast. If not, a whole nother one. It's called A Mind of Their Own, Building Your Child's Emotional Well-Being in a Post-Pandemic World, which is so rich with research that she's boiled down to, that you, Catherine, you're right here, you've boiled down to what parents need to know and then really practical things to do. But here's just one sentence that I wanted to read because it keys off of what you just said, Phil. It's us. It's the parents who are the ones that can make a difference. She said, the difficulty our children face is how to navigate this complex world full of both opportunity and challenge, potential and risk. In this, we can take heart from the fact that the people most able to help them are us, their parents. I'm just so glad you said that. We run to the experts or what everybody is doing. But it's us, it's the parents who are responsible before God and the most influential. Our kids will always listen, even though they don't act like it through certain ages. They will always listen to us more than anybody. We're hard to dismiss when we've loved them well and we're interested and we're involved in their lives and they know that they're safe with us. Mm. Makes us very hard to dismiss. Not that they won't act like they're dismissing.
I would just say kind of as I was reading some of your book, Catherine, I was realizing, I think you even mentioned some of this, but we started introducing these ideas. I think, so we call it a digital rule of life, which we read. And what did you call it?
I put it a family media agreement.
A family media, that even sounds
But it's the same thing.
Yeah, same thing, but I love that. So you could use a rule of life, and if rules don't sound great for you, you can do a family media agreement. It sounds much more like your past though, in the sense of it's a lawyer agreement. So
and it sounds even more official.
That would be my, just on that bit about the putting the ground rules in place. I think so often as parents, we think we've got to be our children's best friend, but actually we're their parents. We're the only parents they have. And actually it's worth taking a hit in the popularity stakes sometimes to make those unpopular things.
I think that's a really powerful word. But in that note, we had some of that set up. So this actually, it wasn't actually hard for us to make this decision. I just said, hey guys, so we already have this going on. Mm-hmm. We're just going to kind of remove the whole thing because, you know, we don't let you run around with knives. And I actually, I said, this is unsafe. It's not safe for you. Even with all the like parental locks, it's still not safe. And Elizabeth actually pushed back. She's not here, so I'm going to talk about her behind her back. she'll hear soon. She actually said, no, she's fine with me sharing this, by the way. But she said, no, I don't want to use the word unsafe because Scarlett, like as an example, one of our daughters has just a lot of fear in general of like being safe is really important to her. So using the word unsafe, she's like, I don't know if that would be triggering to her. And I don't know what it was, but I was like, and this was in the morning when we, and so this is one of those mornings where we woke up oftentimes in the morning. We've talked about this on this podcast before. So I'm going to clue you in, Catherine. Elizabeth does not like to talk in the morning. And so, I've learned over 16 years of marriage, like we just don't talk in the morning. And now I don't want to talk in the morning either when I wake up. Cause I'm like, this is, are you a morning person like that? Do you talk right away when you wake up?
No, I'm probably not. Yeah. Probably more even.
That introvert side comes out. Yeah.
So long story short, I wake up and she's just wanting to talk about all this. And I'm like, oh, I haven't even woken up. Like I'm now becoming the one like, hey, I don't think I want to talk. But we mentioned this in passing really quick. And I was the one that said, no, I actually do want to use the word unsafe because I actually think it really is unsafe. And I think it's actually helpful in painting the picture of what this really is, which is a danger to your mental development. And so that's what I said to both of them. And they, it was amazing to me because of some of the stuff that you've talked about that I know we've implemented, Catherine, is really actually they were both like okay that yeah we get it. And so we didn't say you can't learn stuff. We're like, if you want to learn something, you'll bring the laptop here, we'll sit together as a family, we'll pick the video together and you'll watch it, then we'll close it. And so I that's just one practical example of how
your daughter last night, she told me she'd made this incredible crochet.
Yes,
honestly, I just was so impressed. And she said, I learned to do it online, do it on YouTube. So that's a great example, isn't it?
Oh, I could not. Her dedication to that thing
was fantastic.
She's like crocheting like 75 squares, then to put them all together, then to make a whole cardigan out of it.
Amazing.
I wish this was a visual we could show you.
Yeah, we'll post a picture.
She didn't get that skill from your wife.
Not even
my
close.
Daughter. She didn't get it from Diane. She got it from Diane's mom. So it skipped two generations. Yes. Her mom was the quilting queen.
She's very crafty.
She's very crafty.
But so you've even been able to work around Scarlett's love of creativity, and she's a maker in a world where making things is very popular again.
Yeah.
So there's all sorts of online stuff about it. So what do you do when she wants to explore something new? Are you saying that you sit down, you're not saying it's, you won't do it, that
it's a lot more work.
Did you sit through crochet lessons?
No. So I think there's a couple things we do. Well, I mean, first of all, we do sit down with them. It takes a lot more time. It's a lot more draining. I mean, to be honest, it's a lot of work. At the same time, it's worth it.
That's being a parent though, don't you think?
That's good. It's a lot of work. But I think it's, it looks like, hey, I'm interested in something. Okay, let's do that together. So we sit down. I didn't like, but we approve the video. We pick the video and we say, stay on that video. And we remind them, like, we can look at everything that you look at. So just stay on the video. Yes. So there's a little bit of built-in responsibility and accountability of like, hey, you need to stay on this. But they're not trying to get away with it. They're not trying to find other things. No. If they were, that'd be a whole other conversation. But anyway, that's just one example. But I have seen, even as you're talking about the media agreement, I think that's just such a... I would love to hear a little bit more about that and kind of some of the things that you've put in... And I mean, I'm sure you're in a different phase, but do you have one of these now, or is it probably shifted with your family being older now, or kind of how does that work for you?
It's definitely shifted. I think it is the thing that when we talk at Care for the Family about this area, it's the most popular thing that people, the thing that people want to take away is this idea that you can have this family media agreement. And all we say is get your family together, your whole family. So little ones, teenagers, even the most non-communicative teenager will participate if they think they're being listened to, if they think they've got a voice. Mm-hmm. So get them all together and make it fun. Get some snacks, get some favorite, get some drinks and things. Make it a fun thing.
Yes.
And then just talk together.
Oh, I like this. Instead of just attacking a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Good, and all on the same side.
Yes.
And just talk about what are your ground rules? And it will have to get, so like you say, it's just my husband and I at home now. Ours have left home, but we have grandchildren back. So it has to keep changing.
Yes.
And you will have, well, many families will have children of different ages and stages.
Yeah.
And so the little ones just won't have, as you were saying, the critical faculty to look at and make a decision about what they're watching. Whereas when they're 16, you want to allow them to make some of those decisions. So, but the kind of things that we would recommend would be where and when would you use technology? So do you allow phones at the meal table? Do you allow screens in the bedroom? I think if there is one thing I would just go to the hill over, it would be that. We have had, you know, we hear of teenagers who are setting alarms to wake up in the night to check how many likes they've got on their various social media feeds. It's disrupting sleep. And it's so just, if you cannot have screens in the bedroom, that would be a big one. Yes. And some families are buying these big chargers that you can charge everybody's phone in at night, not in the bedroom. So if you're in a flat, you know, on the landing or downstairs.
Some central area. Exactly. And then everybody's having to keep their phones
there. They put their phones to bed.
Which is great.
That. So, and then I think things like what things can they see? What do they do if they find something that's scary or they're not sure about? Mm-hmm. Who pays? That's a good one. Really, the world's your oyster. And thinking about it, thinking about what the consequences are if somebody strays across the line or walks deliberately over it, which is probably going to happen. And then I know one family had three columns. It was, yes, you can. Ask us first. Don't even think about it.
Oh, that's great.
That's good. There you go. That's good.
And then the real rub is everybody signs up, even the parents, to this. Because we're role models to our children. How we use technology. And I think thinking about it, like not like a straitjacket to restrict their freedom, but it's like, you were talking about safety, it's a seatbelt. To keep them safe.
I like that, the parents too, because it's not do as I say, but I should be modeling this, you know, do as I do. So the you already talked about the child who saw pornography for the first time on the father's computer. Well, there's a father who's
sobering.
Not guarding his home or being an example. He should be. Wow, that's great and very lawyer-like of you. A family media agreement.
Well, when we were just on that about us being role models, when we were filming a resource for Care for the Family, we interviewed a dad, and he told us this heartbreaking story that he was very busy, had quite a responsible job, and he was doing his emails quite a lot on his phone. And his little boy came in and said, "Dad," it was a Saturday morning, Dad, can you come and play football with me?" And he said, in a minute, I'm busy. Can't you see I'm busy? And child went off and then came back. Dad, are you going to come? He said, in a minute, quite irritated. And then finally, little boy came back a third time and he said, can you come and play? And the dad goes, I'm busy. And he said, "Dad, you were a nicer dad before you got your phone."
He said
that moment, it was just heartbreaking, but a wake-up moment to him to realize that there's something called technoference, which is basically when a phone gets in the way of our relationship with someone else. And you know, if we're always on our phone when we're picking them up from school, if the first thing we do when we come in the house is check our emails, they're going to notice that.
Technoference. Can you you do a little marriage counseling for Diane and me? Because I'm the one with the technoference.
We'll be talking
and Brooke will text me, and if I've got my phone there and I start to answer him, that says to you, It's hurtful.
It feels insulting.
I'm not important.
I know how you feel because Elizabeth's the same way.
And you know, from some
of
Diane's wounds, she hears in the back of her head, "I don't matter."
But there's someone else at the table, isn't there?
Yeah, it makes her feel like she doesn't matter, you know? Yeah. You know, we have a friend, Brooke knows him too, a pastor friend of ours, lives in Southern California, Todd Proctor.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things they did as a family sitting down to dinner, which, by the way, families hardly sit down enough to dinner, but there's a basket, everybody's devices, because you know, he had teenagers, goes in the basket. And so that was just a little thing that they did to say, we're not going to have technoference while we're at the dinner table.
You know what's great though, now that my kids are older and all married and have kids of their own, that when we all gather as a family, they put pressure on each other. So if somebody's checking their phone, somebody starts making fun of them, teasing them, or just telling them to put their phone down. That when the rare occasions that our family can all be together, it's not the time to be checking.
You know, the family meeting that I'm remembering is John Mark brought a lockbox. You remember he brought the clear lockbox? It's like a safe.
Yes.
And this is so John Mark because he loves this stuff.
Rules.
He loves the structure. And he brings this to our family vacation. Yes. And some, you know, most of us can turn off our phones, but then there's other people in the family that are like, hey, I still have to, like, we're running a business from away and we're not fully away, so we can't turn off our phones. And so it was so funny. He puts it on the counter and he says, okay, who's putting their phone in or whatever, just something along these lines. And then like, I think everyone put their phones in, but over the matter of like a day or two, everyone slowly just slipped their phone out.
Like in the box for the whole holiday.
Oh yeah. That was the idea. And I thought, and it was a lovely idea. And I think as much as you could do something like that, do it. But, and he's also really good. That takes a lot of work, and he's really dedicated to do the work on the pre to make sure that he can get there and actually do that. So I know that not everybody can do that, and it takes a lot of work. But I just thought it was so funny because this box is locked and everyone's having to come and get the code from him.
Yeah, Catherine, this wasn't an everyday occurrence. So we try to get together every year. All the kids and all the grandkids.
Yeah, I was talking about this.
Yeah, Camp Comer. This was a Camp Comer thing. And we hadn't had it for a few years because of COVID.
It was noble.
So it was a noble gesture.
It was noble.
But our daughter and husband run their own business and they couldn't stay.
But it was just encouraging that your kids are going to get to a stage where they understand what you're trying to teach them, and they may actually be more severe about it than you ever were, and you're going to say, okay, they resisted me in all those years, thought I was just an old fuddy-duddy, or what did you say, a dinosaur enforcing this digital rule of life or family media agreement, but there's going to come a day where they're going to do the same thing. And that's, so you're then even reaching down to the next generation to say, yes, these things can be controlled. Mm. And if we want to be wise people and people of freedom, then we need to control them.
Yeah.
So I was going to say even Sweet Birdie, who is not always aware of all the details of the social realm. Yeah. She even... I'm rarely on my phone at home because once I'm home, it's like dad's home. And I honestly, like, I don't like being on my phone at home because I agreed. Like, I don't like what it communicates.
Yeah.
But there are times when I have to be on my phone for different things. And so I get this text and Birdie's talking to me. She's like, dad. And she goes, ugh. And I hear her in the back. She goes, ugh, you're just distracted. You're so distracted. And I was like,
oh, wow.
And I was like, she's very rarely communicative about these social dynamics. I was like, you know, that's
6 years old.
Yeah, I was like, I'm putting this phone down and throwing it away. I'm going to bury it.
I asked your oldest, Duke, how he liked the first meet and greet at school.
Oh,
my. And he was really down in the dumps. And he'd gone in so excited because his class is like all boys and only one girl. You know? And so he was really down in the dumps. And he said, Amma, they're all gamers. They can't even talk. They can't even in have a conversation with them, you know. And then
we had to help him see that wasn't totally true. But
his first impression was going to be that, and I think
it was a great. You know what? It's interesting because there is this growing frustration with communication, right? I'm sure you see this, Catherine, right? Where you're just like, oh, we've lost the art of communication.
Yes.
But it was also a great lesson for him to be like, hey, do not judge books by their covers, because it's so easy to be like, these are my social dispositions. That doesn't mean that somebody, I mean, maybe someone likes gaming, but that doesn't mean they're
interesting that even at his age, he knows that this is a thing, that that kids' imaginations are being captured by the games to such a degree that it's not just a fun thing to do anymore, but it is,
it's an identity.
It's shutting them down and their ability to just play with somebody face to face.
So,
and I think they, in terms of gaming, I mean, the certainly in COVID as well.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about this.
Yes, so many children formed relationships online through gaming. And for our young people, gaming and social media are one and the same.
Mm.
I mean, it's where they meet friends and they would think that's as real a relationship as a face-to-face one.
Because they've never actually met these.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's children on the other side. Not always.
Sometimes it's, you know, it's not all bad. And there's some really, you know, some children have found real value in being able to connect with others online like that. But it's good as parents to, again, we've talked about this, haven't we, but have their eyes on and to be able to, don't let them just have the headphones on so you don't hear the language that's being spoken. You can, so you can be part of it.
Yeah. Tell me, so I know we're going to be wrapping up in a minute, but I want to ask a question for the person that might jump on here and listen to this and go, my kids play games. They kind of have carte blanche with the screens and we don't limit too much. You guys are all overreacting. Cause I do hear that too. What would you say are the potential things to be aware of or the consequences if we don't consider some of this? Now I know that every family has, like we've said, different needs, different responsibilities, different values. That's okay. But I feel more and more like to ignore this seems like an unawareness, a disconnect from reality. What, in your experience, and what would you say to those who are like, it's not that big of a deal? How would you respond to that?
Well, I think in the same way that we teach our children to cross the road safely, to swim, to all those, you know, to exercise, to eat their broccoli, whatever other those things are, we need to be doing the same in the digital world. And we've said, haven't we already, each child is different and only the parent knows the maturity of the child. And I think like you wouldn't just throw a baby in the swimming pool without armbands proper or teaching training. Them to swim. It's about journeying with them and allowing them and teaching them wisdom. You know, the Bible has so much to say about wisdom. The book of Proverbs is just full of it. And in fact, I end the book really with a quote from the book of Proverbs about wisdom, you know, as a garland to your neck. And wisdom keeps you safe. And so I think it's just not being naive and expecting our children to be able to cope with a world that really is fairly limitless in terms of the content and the conduct and the the contact, but actually coming alongside them and equipping them to deal with it well and make wise choices in a world where any choice is possible, not just limiting. I think I was always so concerned as a parent that they might come to harm or something might happen. I made their worlds too small sometimes rather than equipping them to deal with
the big stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's that tension is always hard. In your other book, A Mind of Their Own, there was a chapter title that caught my mind right away, and it's You Were Never Their Age.
Oh, me too. Isn't that wonderful?
It was fascinating.
You have to read that one first.
Yeah. Well, I was just pointing out, like, you used this example of a child psychologist that was talking with a group of parents, and someone was pretty vocal in this question and answer time. I'm just repeating you to yourself. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
and someone interrupted and said, I think some of them just need to toughen up a bit. And she declared, when I was their age, and before she could even finish it, the child psychologist stopped her and said very slowly and deliberately, Madam, you were never their age. And give me a heads up on what that implies. I think I know, but I'd love to hear more of what you say about that, because that's kind of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, well, I think in many ways our children are growing up in a world that is light years away from the one that we grew up in. Mm-hmm. And when I was a teenager, you had to dial up a phone with a curly cord that, you know, you'd listen and everyone in the house could hear your conversation. And we are so far from that now. So there are opportunities that our children have, incredible opportunities, but also dangers that come with it. And so really that's the deal, is how as parents we can help them make the most of those opportunities, but keep them safe.
And also accept what I hear you kind of saying, tell me if I'm right or wrong on this, but deriving the fact that to put old answers on new problems seems to be very unwise. Talking about Proverbs seems to not be helpful, because that idea, so our daughter Birdie went to food therapy. Something I learned there when she was learning how to chew properly, because her mouth was formed differently. The doctor there, or the OT, she's the occupational therapist, she said, you understand that eating is one of the only things that you do that includes all five of your senses. And I was like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? She's like, touch, sight, sound, smell, taste. Mm-hmm. So when you tell your child, just stay at the table and finish your food, do you realize how there can almost be a full assault against their senses as a human, right? So obviously her position is going to be extreme. And I'm not trying to prove a point about making your kids finish food. I'm trying to point out that awareness really changed my thinking to, instead of looking at like, you won't eat broccoli because you're defiant, realizing you, let's ask questions. And we learned like about like one of our other kids, like they just hated the texture of broccoli.
Oh yeah.
They would eat it in any other form. Oh. And if they could just cut off one part of it, it had nothing to do with the taste. It was just the texture. Yeah. And then we learned like, oh, that's a taste thing, but I like the texture. And so it's just like opening our mind to go, for a person like Birdie or a little girl like Birdie, to make her eat everything is way more traumatizing than maybe another little one. Mm-hmm. And to learn that and understand. So what I'm kind of deriving from what you're saying is, do not apply those. Like you've never been that age. Like you were never their age. And I love that thinking.
I think
that applies to so many.
And I think
things.
We should all adopt it, no matter. I mean, for me as a grandmother to realize you and Elizabeth are raising our grandchildren.
Yeah. You're doing.
They happen to be your kids. In a world,
your grandchildren first.
So different.
Yeah, you're raising ours. Our
I know. Yeah. I felt
you heard
that
as she said that. Right? I felt that.
Yeah. Might have been a little overbearing, but in a world so different than ours that to apply what you're saying is apply some of the things that we said that made sense back in the 80s and 90s when they were raising you no longer makes sense for in this world. And we need to, our generation, those of us who are older, need to be humbly aware of how much life has changed, how fast it's changed, and supportive of our kids and asking good questions, challenging questions, but not imposing on what was relevant for us in the 80s and 90s, because it's just not.
No, that's good. In the Bible, it talks about the people of Issachar, doesn't it, who knew the times. And I think, you know, as parents, we need to know the times. And also, I think, I mean, we haven't really talked much about this, but knowing that our children are not, this is not a level playing field. There are tech companies out there, tech giants who are, you know, there's something called the attention economy. You know, the thing that they want now is not minerals or precious metals. It's our children, well, everyone's attention.
Our attention.
That is, that's why there's a, it's not a level playing field, and we need to be just on their side and helping them manage that.
The sons of this, go ahead, babe.
Yeah. One more quote from her other book, which I'm hoping we're going to talk about. Our brains, she says, writes, are highly tuned to social acceptance and rejection, and the need to accumulate likes and followers means that for the first time in history, our children have a number allocated to their worth. Isn't that just amazing? The thought, how many followers I have likes, may affect how our children's worth. Social media provides fertile soil for anxiety and other negative emotions, particularly among those who are the most vulnerable to mental health issues.
Yeah.
Which a lot of that is our very sensitive children, our very gentle children. It is ironic that reducing use of social media has been found to make young people feel less lonely. I'm just amazed by that.
Can you say anything
about that? I mean, what is this lonely thing?
And I think, just the whole thing about identity and how social media encourages our children to create and then recreate an identity that sometimes bears no relation to real life at all.
Yeah.
And they look in the mirror and they realize that there's a gap between real life and the identity that they've created on social media. And then that makes them feel anxious.
Yes.
And it's like a perpetual thing. Yes. So again, there's probably a whole podcast on on social media and the effects of it. But
it absolutely is. What were you going to say, Phil?
I think you're wrapping this up pretty quick. I can kind of tell, right? But I just wanted to...
Not unless we want to.
As soon as Catherine said, I ended my book with a verse from Proverbs.
I know. I knew this was coming.
Because, you know, we're talking about how the times, you know, the times they changed. Are a-changing. Who sang that, Bob Dylan? Years ago, whatever. And the sons of Issachar, you quoted them.
Yes.
They were men who understood the times. So, yes, we need to study the times. We need to be wise. And because things are changing fast, but God never changes. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And he is wisdom. And Proverbs 9:10, you know, one of the translations I memorized years ago, for the reverence and fear of God are basic to all wisdom. Knowing God results in every other kind of understanding. So he is wisdom. So to the moms and dads, the closer we are to the Lord and the more we know him, he's not left you alone in this task. He's going to give you wisdom.
Yeah.
And so, man, I mean, when we were raising, you know, your wife, Elizabeth, we were hold hands
Thank
and pray,
you,
Lord,
way,
how do we do
that.
This? And now it's, you know, it's a scary time. Uh-huh. But yeah. I mean, the book of Proverbs is just loaded with wisdom of how to deal with sexuality and marriage and parenting and finances. And so,
Screens. I will put no vain thing.
Yeah, Psalm 101. But I mean, Proverbs, I just had to get a push in there. Like, I read it every day. Today's the 19th. I read Proverbs 19, and I've got it. And I'm God's speaking to me every time I read it. And so,
still,
I think every parent needs to. Well, live in the Bible, but live in that book.
There's one book a day, isn't it, for the month for Proverbs?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I learned that from. I heard Billy Graham did it. I said, I respect him, I'm going to do it.
He's done that forever.
You know, and then, you know, we want to live in a way that's pleasing to the Lord, because Proverbs says, if a man's ways are pleasing to the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. In other words, this is the way to live life.
Yes.
So we need it. Man, we need it.
What were you going to say, Catherine?
No, I was just going to say, this is how I end it. It says, the writer in the ancient book of Proverbs says this about wisdom. Do not forsake wisdom, and she will protect you. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom. And then I say, that, I imagine, is what we want for all our children.
Yes.
You know, we want them to have the wisdom, don't we?
And as parents, maybe the highest praise that we should be giving our children now is not, good job, you did so well on that exam, but son, I see what a wise decision you made. If maybe we need to start using the word wisdom and wise as encouraging words to our kids so that they realize, oh, it's wisdom that I want to get more than anything else. If I can accumulate wisdom, my life is going to be rich and full.
Yeah, so this is a question that's completely not even relegated to either of these books. But one thing you said that is something you focused a lot on is marriage. And we're all married and obviously would love to grow in that. But as you've written some work on that, and if you're like, I don't want to go there, just say so. like, I pass. You can just say pass. But what's some of the stuff for you? What are a couple key things that have been foundational for you over the years to learn about marriage, but also that you've taught on for marriage for couples? Like something that you'd say, hey, if you're married, here's a couple really foundational things that you need to just be aware of and know.
So many.
I know it's a big question.
Oh, make you choose. She's got another podcast or two in her just on marriage.
I want to tease her.
I love that. Just what comes to your mind?
Because I would say, number one would be, I wish someone had said to me on the day we got married, when I made my promise, you know, to love Richard, that was a promise I would need to keep and make and choose every single day, that love is a choice. And that wonderful feeling of falling in love, as wonderful as it is, changes over the years. And there are days when you don't feel in love, but actually you still need to choose to do the loving thing.
Yes.
That's good. So that one, I would think learning to argue well.
Ooh.
So I used to think that I was pretty okay because I used
both of you are lawyers. No, but wait, two lawyers? That's got to be
two lawyers. Oh my gosh.
But Richard would express himself when he was cross and we've had an argument, and I would just retreat.
Yes.
And I thought I had the sort of moral high ground because I didn't really say how I felt. I would just sulk or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed to say. And just realizing that actually, if you bottle it up, it's just as bad, sometimes worse, because
later,
then it comes out at another time. So I think learning to remembering that we're on the same side and putting the problem out in front of us, that's been a key thing for us. And then learning to come at it together and it not becoming a personal thing between us, but addressing the issue. That would be a good one. And having fun, having a laugh, I mean, that's been I think having humor and that just brings a lightness to keeping us, not taking ourselves too seriously.
Yes. Who's funnier, you or Richard?
Probably he is, but I try to.
I like how you said that, learning to argue well. You know, I've heard people say fight fair, but the word fight sounds like I'm against you. So argue well is good.
Good.
Diane's mom, she was the crafty one that Scarlett got the gift from. You know, she made quilts and stuff and stitcheries too.
Yeah.
And one that was on the wall when I first fell in love with my bride here was, choose thy love, love thy choice.
Oh.
And I never heard that before. You know, it sounds kind of cheesy, but it's like...
It's a great thing to crochet.
It's a great thing to crochet. It's a Hallmark moment.
Yeah.
But it's just what you just said. Just like, okay, we made this decision before God, this covenant before God. And now I'm called to love my choice.
The bottling up thing that you just said, though, you know, you said sometimes it makes it worse for the person who feels like they're taking the moral high ground by not saying their things and stuffing them. Uh-huh. What was your experience? I mean, you don't have to overshare. Feel free to share as much as you want. But what was your experience with bottling it up over time? Because there's a lot of people that I know do that. They go, no, I'm doing the right thing by not even arguing with you.
So a lot of people you know, Brooke?
No, not you. Not you. I'm talking about my wife.
I'm just laughing because at the start of this conversation, we should have a little hidden camera. Brooke starts looking at me, knowing that my daughter and I are the ones
I wasn't trying to pick on you, but you do bottle it up.
The moral.
Let me just say.
And then I started looking at you.
So let me just say something. Diane and Elizabeth are more prone to this, but Phil and I are more aggressive in the sense like we want to deal with the problem. So it's both bad.
Let's get it fixed.
But let's get it fixed. It doesn't work. You're talking about, we're probably more like Richard, and Elizabeth and Diane are more like you. Without saying names, it's Elizabeth and Diane. but some people I know are this has a tendency. So what would you say in your experience from that?
Yeah. So, firstly, I think it's what I saw modeled growing up. So I don't think I ever saw my parents have a disagreement about anything. And, you know, that wasn't necessarily a good thing.
No.
Because stuff happens and we have to sort it out.
Yeah. Conflict is part of a good relationship. Yeah.
And realizing that being honest about how we feel and kind of avoiding, focusing on the I feel X when you do Y is so much healthier than you're always or you never.
Yeah.
So trying to avoid those phrases and actually just this whole thing about being on the same side. I think that was the sort of changing moment for us when we realized that we could talk about things and then you're free to move forward and to be creative and to learn together and all those things. Whereas if you never bring that out into the open, it sort of holds you back. Yeah.
But you
and I keep hearing you say both when it came to parenting and when it comes to marriage, the same phrase, you're both on the same side. I think that's just, that should be cross-stitched.
That needs to be crocheted.
Or crocheted.
Get Scarlett to learn learn cross-stitch next.
I'm pulling up a YouTube video now. We'll be good. In your situation with Richard as an example, you guys would get in an argument, would you bottle up and then would you end up like, it's just seeping out later in frustration? Is that how it played out?
I'd be ashamed to say I'd be grumpy. Yeah. I would avoid eye contact. I can't believe it now, but I did.
You're human.
I'm very human.
There's no perfect person at this table.
But that's as much a barrier, if not more a barrier than harsh words. If someone withdraws.
Yeah.
So that's what I would essentially do.
Okay, so here's another question for Phil and I specifically, but I'll just say some friends I know. I'm wondering what can they do as men to help draw their wives out in that situation from your experience? What's a helpful, I mean, in some ways I'm sure we have some things that, you know, Phil, you've
been. We kind of know what's not helpful.
I know it's not helpful, but for anybody listening who's in that space, like what's a helpful way to approach your spouse in that situation?
I would say kind, affirming words. And
Diana's shaking her head so much.
Sisters over here. Yeah. They're like friends for life now. Yeah. They're like
letting me know that I'm understood and valued.
Yeah.
And then that actually opens up the, you know, you can then draw together in that space.
Yeah.
Whereas when we're putting up barriers, then we can't.
Yes.
I mean, 1 Corinthians 13 is all about that, isn't it?
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Yes, that's a great reminder. Catherine, I'm so grateful. Thank you for spending time with us. Thank you for going all the way from your home in Bristol, correct? Is that correct?
I'm saying that is correct.
Yeah, Bristol, all the way over to here. And it's just such a gift to be able to sit down with you and spend the week with you. And thank you for contributing. And A Mind of Their Own, we'll make sure to put that in the show notes as well as Left to Their Own Devices. And where can people find you? Carefortthefamily.com is or .org.
.org.uk. Care for the Family or CFF. Carefortthefamily.org. kathfamily.co.uk. And okay. Easy to access. Lots of information that I really hope will help families. Yes. And just to say, Intentional Parent as well does such a great job. We're really, really happy to be involved in this with you. And thank you for having me on this podcast.
Oh, it's an easy, we will have you back because we need, we need some sophistication.
I'll be there.
Yeah. And we need Phil to continue to work on his accent. So.
I pray that we'd finally get to connect with Care for the Family in the UK. And they sent us the best persons.
They did. Yes.
God sent the best person. And sure Rob's amazing too. I'd like to meet him someday. But thank you for your time.
So. And I would just like to really emphasize, for those of you who are more Phil and my generation, or for younger parents, hint, hint to your older parents.
Yeah.
I think these books, both written by a grandmother, would really be beneficial for every grandparent who really loves her grandkids and really wants to help them through this world, both of these books, because many of us are not aware of some of the stuff that's going on in the digital world and how important it is that they need to be in the digital world, not just, you know, let's do the Amish thing where we withdraw. But then I'm reading A Mind of Their Own, and she has just done such a brilliant job of taking the research of what we about what is now known about emotional health and bringing it down to, sometimes I call it, this ages me, the Reader's Digest version. Of course, none of you kids have ever read the Reader's Digest, but
no,
they used to take
I know what you mean.
The best of the research and put it in an article. And she's done that, but not only done that, but then she's put at the end really doable things
The practical.
To help your kids and your grandkids. Because I really believe that grandparents have a unique role in their grandchildren of being a really safe place if they choose to be.
Yes.
Or they can just sound kind of old and harpy. So it's up to us, isn't it? but by reading That's A Mind true. Of Their Own, I feel like we can get some of the best research and understand how we can really care for our children who have been assaulted since the post-pandemic world and even everything that's going on in the U.S. politically and socially. So I hardly ever push a book as much as I love books, but this one I just am going to push on. Yeah.
And you know what's great? As an aesthetic, they match. I love that.
Yeah,
so don't
they
get
do.
One, get two, because they match.
They didn't and used to.
They
no,
didn't. I'm
no,
so
no.
Glad.
The new edition of Left Their Own Devices was specially done to match.
I'm so glad because now it's like there's something similar about these, but they're different. I love the creativity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Catherine Hill, thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes if you enjoyed today's episode and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.